Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents She Came for Blood by Darva Green, narrated by Parker Everly. But dreams come through stone walls, light up dark rooms or darken light ones, and their persons make their exits and their entrances as they please and laugh at locksmiths. Sheridan Le Fanu, Carmilla. Prologue. Mara, before. Winter bared its teeth before we were ready for its bite. My sisters and I thought we were safe in our cottage, huddled together near the stove for warmth when the day's work was done. We'd faced harsh winters before. This was merely another rough season to get through. But a fever crept in with the frost that swept in too early and killed the year's meager harvest. We were already tired and hungry when the cold seeped into the cracks of our beloved home and turned our world upside down. Darina and Lacia recovered from the illness, but I was plagued with chills and aches for weeks. My sisters took turns spooning watery broth into my mouth and placing me in a nest of quilts atop the stove to sweat the fever out. Despite their efforts, I was barely clinging to life when death came to our doorstep. The knocking was so subtle I thought it was the wind howling against the shutters at first, but Darina stopped sharpening her knife at the sound, and Lazia's hands froze around the bottle of dried yarrow. Darina's blade glinted in the firelight as she used a single finger to push the curtains aside. "There's a man at our door," she said. "It's the middle of the night." Lacia corked the bottle and wiped her hands on her skirt. "What does he want?" Darina glanced back, her eyebrows knitting together. The three of us knew what a strange man in the middle of the night meant, and we only had each other for protection. "Go," I coughed, turning my head to the side before Lacia could drip water into my mouth. "Take our food and leave through the back. It's too cold for you. You'll never make it." Lacia smoothed her palm over my forehead, panic flooding her pale green eyes as she sensed the heat radiating from my body. I used all of my strength to raise my arm and swat her away. As much as I wanted my sisters by my side at the end, they had a life to live. "Leave me."
"No."
Darina exchanged a look with my sister, who nodded her agreement.
"No one will drive us out into the snow to catch our death. If we burn together."
The stranger knocked again, his three sharp raps too distinct to ignore this time. Darina swung the door open, holding a threatening stance with her knife poised in front of her, just as our father had shown her years before. The man held up his hands.
"I mean no harm," he said, as a bitter chill rolled over the floor.
Darina kept him from moving any closer with the tip of her blade.
"We have nothing for you to steal." "I only wish to warm my bones by your stove for an hour. Then I promise I'll be on my way."
His dark hair hung in wind-blown tangles around his pale, waxen face. A toe wiggled out from a hole in his worn shoe, and a threadbare coat hung from his wiry frame. If he stayed out in the snow, he'd be dead by morning.
"I only need you to invite me in."
Years later, I'd come back to this moment, wishing I could tell myself all the things I didn't know back then. I should have screamed at my sister to slam the door in his face, to hide from the window until the sun rose the next morning. But we didn't know he was a monster who needed an invitation. We thought a desperate man would find another way in. It was better to handle the situation on our own terms, and so we let him in. We didn't realize our mistake until it was too late. Blood was everywhere. It coated our hair and covered the floor my sisters and I lay on side by side. I slid my fingers through it, the liquid going cold as I tried to search for the wood grain beneath. There was too much. I'd lost too much. I should have been dead, but oily fluids pumped through my veins, too thick to be my own blood, so cold it burned. I could hear it pulsing beneath my skin. My limbs went rigid like a corpse's, my bones snapping into a stiff position. It was unlike any illness I'd ever experienced. There was no respite from the feverish fit. When I closed my eyes, the world was still crimson, and although we were alone, everything was so loud. I heard Lacia's final heartbeat and Orina's last breath. I couldn't turn my head to see them, but I knew they were dead. The loss of my sisters splintered through me, a specific, unbearable pain that made the agony of dying seem dull in comparison. I welcomed the shadows that closed in on my vision. Mara, Mara, Mara! My heart stopped completely, but the whispered chanting continued. I sought the voice that called to me through the void. That's when my strange angel descended, a creature from another world entirely, with her odd attire and black wings stretched wide. She wore tight blue trousers and a shirt that left her arms bare, displaying the inky swirls and images running from her shoulders to her wrists. A black butterfly was painted on her inner bicep. Her hair was as red as the color behind my eyelids, the flames of hell, the frost-covered rose that she was holding in her hand. I recognized it as the lone survivor from the withered bush beneath our window. She bent over my sisters and closed their eyes, and then she knelt over me to place the flower on my chest. I waited for her to fold my arms and send me to my final rest, to send me to the peaceful place where my sisters were waiting. She brought her lips to my forehead, answering my unspoken prayer for a woman's kiss. My angel had heard the quiet longing of my heart. I sighed, ready to let go, but the angel didn't come to grant me the mercy of death. She grasped my chin and forced me to meet her gaze as she spoke in a foreign tongue. I didn't understand the words, but I could decipher their meaning from the urgent tone of her voice and the frantic look in her eyes. She was willing me to stay, to live, to fight, as the overwhelming heat of bloodlust pulsed through my body. My angel stayed by my side as I was ripped from death's embrace and delivered to a different kind of afterlife.
Chapter 1. Anna. You'll watch your true love die 3 times before joining them in death. I scratch the words on paper to get them out of my head, but the relief is temporary. It's not like I can forget. I drag my pencil down to the center of the page and draw a woman's hand. I erase it and start again to emphasize the way her elegant fingers are splayed out, their tips barely touching the rose she's holding to her nose. That's better. I blow the eraser dust off her shoulders and shade in her long hair. That's how she looked when she appeared to me last night. I've always been prone to prophetic dreams. They show me things before they happen, but sometimes the images get mixed up with clips of random people or places I've already seen. The muddled scenes make it difficult to interpret the messages in my dreams, but sketching them out helps me to untangle the mess. Billy didn't trust my unreliable gifts. I used to freak out about the things I'd seen, and most of them never ended up happening. He didn't take me seriously when I warned him not to leave. Two dreams about him getting his throat ripped out meant nothing when I was constantly spiraling. The dreams have been getting worse since Billy's death, and the witch's words are always running in the background. You'll watch your true love die three times before joining them in death. I watched Billy die twice in my dreams before his brother Andrew showed me photographic evidence of the murder scene. He was found in a cabin with puncture wounds in his neck. It all appeared exactly the same way it did in my dreams. That means half of the prophecy has come true, and now I can feel the other half coming for me. My phone rings on the makeshift altar I've set up on the nightstand. I refine the curve of the woman's shoulder and admire my work. She's beautiful, but I don't know if there's any deeper meaning to last night's dream. Sighing, I close the notebook and grab my phone before it cuts to voicemail. What's up? I greet my brother with the phone wedged between my cheek and my shoulder as I rearrange my candles. I'll be too tired to bother with setting up my rituals later. It's better to prepare everything now so I don't fall asleep without completing them. I got caught up in a case. Any chance you can look into someone's dreams for me tonight? Dimitri asks, sounding stressed. He must be if he's asking me for that favor. Like most of our family, we can both walk through dreams, but he can do it with perfect clarity. His gifts aren't as volatile as mine. He's never had to deal with confusing images or random clips from the future. Can't. I throw some stuff in my bag. Hand warmers, a steak, and snacks. Plenty of snacks. I won't be back until sunrise. I have plans.
What kind of plans?
The usual. I zip up my jacket. I'm on a case involving a bunch of frat boys who fell into a rabbit hole on the internet and accidentally summoned a demon. They've been ordering it to do the most benignly chaotic things.
Those are the worst cases, he says. I hate it when they don't even know what they're doing.
Me too. The organization we work for doesn't care if someone unintentionally gets themselves into a pickle with a demon or some other supernatural being. Our job is to keep those entities from gaining a foothold in our world. We clean up messes and make sure our work goes unseen.
What state are you in? He asks.
I twist the wand to open the dusty blinds covering the motel window. The sun is sinking between the two snow-capped mountains rising over the field of pine trees that obscure the winding road. Florida, I say, my breath fogging the window. The kids are using their demonic powers to shift into alligators, and they keep breaking into shopping malls to steal shit.
Damn it, Dimitri groans. Are you in fucking Wyoming again?
I am.
No. He doesn't believe me. He knows I'm here for the Vampire Queen, and I know he disapproves.
You haven't found her yet. Can you let this go?
He'd like for me to do that and stop drawing negative attention to myself. But he wasn't there the day Andrew delivered the binder full of Billy's notes to me. He wasn't there when he cried for his brother and told me the secrets he'd shared with him but had never told me. Billy had business with Marzana. I don't know what it was, but he told Andrew about their meetings.
She's too powerful to face any consequences for this, Andrew said, his eyes all bloodshot. The Order won't approve.
He leaned in close as he whispered to me.
But if anyone can make this right, it's you.
I know what I have to do. It's good to have a sense of purpose when there's a witch's voice on a repeat loop in your head telling you that you're doomed. No one else knows about that, but it affects everything I do. I can't. I wipe my nose on my sleeve.
Do what you need to do, but I don't think this is a good idea for you.
He blows a raspberry.
Don't forget that we have to be in Denver on Monday. I don't want to deal with that occultist circle alone.
I'll be there.
Good, he says. And Anna?
I press down on one of the plastic blinds to watch a car pull into the lot. Yes?
Be careful. I don't want another incident like the one in New Jersey.
I shiver, remembering the tight restraints around my wrists. I don't want that either. Okie dokie. I hang up and brace my hands on the window frame, bouncing my knee as I urge the night to come faster. A familiar pink glow flickers past the pine trees. There's still some time to kill before any of the vampires will be out and about. One drink won't hurt. By the time I'm done, the sun will be down. I walk along the empty road until I see the sign lighting up the deepening sky. Pink neon twists into the shape of a cowgirl's silhouette, her lasso flicking out into big looping letters that spell Rosie's Rodeo Bar. My boots stick to the floor as I walk past the jukebox and the mechanical bull where a bachelorette party is cheering on a bride-to-be who's way too drunk to be riding that thing. I pass all the booths and settle into the only bar stool that has empty seats on each side. The bartender waves and slides a 16-ounce draft of Blue Moon down to me. Over the past few years, she's gotten used to me ordering the same thing, beer and a plate of hot wings. Aside from the 6 months when I couldn't travel, I visited this place once a month since Andrew gave me the task of avenging his brother. I don't mind the occasional Shania Twain song, but I can't say I'm here for the country ambiance. It's just the only place that serves food and alcohol within a 5-mile radius of Marzana's rumored location. Back when this all started, I thought it was only a legend. A vampire castle carved into a mountain range sounded completely made up to me. But 4 years have passed, and I've found hints of its existence. There's a strong glamour concealing it from human eyes, but if I can locate the seam of the spell, I can unravel it and slip into her kingdom. I glance down at my drink. One has somehow become 3.5, and I've lost sight of the rodeo bachelorette. They've been swallowed by the crowd.
I pay my tab and head out to the back patio. It's too cold for anyone else to be out here. Christmas lights hang from the tin roof above me, even though it's almost spring. I lean on the railing and finish my drink as I look up at the starry sky. It's a wide expanse that mirrors my emptiness. It's the darkness of my dreams staring back at me. I clutch my glass, losing my nerve to go out tonight. I don't know what's wrong with me. I've done this so many times. I've even gotten close to Marzana in the woods before. I've heard her guards call her name before whisking her away. But I've never seen her face. She's the first thing I think about in the morning, and the last thing I think about at night. Her shadowy silhouette is always dancing behind my closed eyes. Sometimes I feel like everything will be fine if I accomplish this one thing and get her out of my head. But lately, I've been too numb to see how any of this will help me. Lately, I've been thinking about giving up. There are other means of distraction. I have money, anonymity, plenty of gorgeous men and women around the world who are always down for a no-strings-attached hookup. The Order has tons of work for me. I can keep myself so busy that I'll have no time to think about the second half of the witch's prophecy. Billy was my mentor long before he became something more. We had our fights, but he'd always answer my call if I needed advice. Now I have no one to turn to. I hear a sucking noise and squint past the green and red glow of the tacky lights. There's a flash of white in between the pines at the other end of the lot. A man in a flannel jacket has his face tucked into a woman's neck. A white sash falls from her shoulder as she leans back against the tree. I make out the words, "Bride-to-be." I guess she needed one last rodeo before the big day. I chuckle with my mouth on the rim of the glass, stopping as I realize there's something off about what I'm seeing. His broad shoulders hunch over her slim frame, but I can tell how her head is slumping to the side as he kisses her. Oh, hell no. Where are her friends? She's way too wasted to be out here with this guy. She doesn't even have a coat on. Hey, douchebag, I call, cupping my hands around my mouth. He tenses and draws back slightly without looking at me.
Mind your own business.
His voice is deep and dark. He's about 6'2" and from what I can tell, pretty jacked. He probably doesn't expect me to mess with him when I'm out here alone. There's a camera on the left corner of the roof, right by the steps to the path. I don't want to get caught on that. I slip my backpack down to my waist and take out my white mask, pulling it over my face. Moving down the steps, I reach for my glass, and when I'm close enough, I wing it at his head. It hits with a satisfying crack that rips a bubble of laughter from my chest. His black waves fall over his shoulders as he spins around with a growl. I always love the part when they notice my stitched neon pink smile and the X's for eyes on my mask. It usually gives them the creeps. I wait for him to panic when he sees my face, but I'm the one who ends up freezing in place. Blood drips from his mouth. It coats his lips and the fangs in his awful open scowl. Alcohol slows my reaction time. It takes me a second to catch up with what's happening. Shit! Don't come any closer,
I shriek, my voice barely carrying over the country music blaring through the patio speakers. I have pepper spray! I reach into the side pouch of my backpack and wrap my hand around the steak. I've been saving this one for Marzana, but it's all I've got on hand. My fingers close around it as he comes at me, shoving me hard enough to knock my legs out from under me. He manages to flip me over mid-air and I land on my belly. Fucking ouch, I say, spitting gravel. My wrist stings from the impact, but I keep my hand tucked underneath me as he drags me back toward him. I'm going to have the worst fucking rug burn from this.
I told you to mind your business, he says, sliding a hand under my hip to flip me onto my back. He straddles me with blood dripping from his open mouth. I pull my arm tighter against my chest. He's too focused on my neck to notice what I'm holding. You're not my type, but you do smell delicious. He rocks back and heaves himself forward to bite me. I rotate my wrist, angling the steak toward his sternum. The tip hits him before the bite can land. I don't have much leverage here, but he's doing most of the work for me. I only have to push a little further. My back lifts as I drive it up and break through the breastbone. His eyes widen as I pierce his heart. You ugly fucking witch. You're not looking too hot yourself, I retort as black veins tread down from his hairline and race across his pale forehead. They run down his throat and disappear beneath the collar of his flannel. He roars and presses his hands into my neck. I wriggle, trying to escape his grasp. Not only is he cutting off my oxygen supply, but he's trapping me beneath him for his gory ending. His veins multiply, running closer together. I bite my lips shut, even though I want to gasp for air. Vampires don't bleed out when you stake them. They turn into a big pile of goop. I turn my head to the side as he comes undone, and thick liquid splashes all over me. It dribbles in through the sides of my mask. I pull it back on my head and spit until my mouth is clear. The bride-to-be whimpers and clings to the tree. I shake the excess goo from my tactical pants and head over to her. My boots make squishy sounds the whole way over. It's okay. He's gone, I say, crouching down beside her. There are two puncture wounds on her neck, but they're not bleeding profusely. We should probably get you to a hospital or something. Her jaw is trembling. I take my jacket off and cover her up. She stares down at it, then looks up at me. She sucks in a breath, and I hold up my hands. I know this looks bad, but it'd be really cool if you didn't scream. She screams anyway, and she's loud enough to rival the song playing on the speakers. A car engine cuts through the noise. Someone is speeding up the mountain, their tires screeching on the twisty road. I back away. I'm not sure what to do in this situation. I want to help, but I can't get caught breaking the order's rules again. Please let me help you, I say, but she crab crawls away from me, moving further into the trees. A black SUV races into the lot, and another one kicks up gravel as it pulls in behind it. My heart stops. The superiors of the order always travel in these kinds of vehicles. I don't know how they found me here, but I guess I'm officially screwed. The order sticks to dealing with demonic entities and lesser-known creatures.
Technically, we're not allowed to mess with vampires or werewolves without blatant approval. And nothing I've done here has been approved.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?